This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. This hour, putting Obama's recovery plan to the test. Each day seems to bring some new revelation about how truly troubled the economy is. Tuesday, even as the president-elect was outlining his plans for a recovery in a brief press conference, the Congressional Budget Office was reporting a $1.2 trillion deficit. And here's the kicker. That doesn't include the massive spending that would be done under the Obama proposal. And there's more. Pensions are taking a multi-billion dollar hit. Manufacturing is in dire straits. And analysts are braced for some new unemployment numbers this week that could be truly ugly. That's the environment in which President-elect Obama goes to George Mason University this morning to outline his economic recovery plan. We'll listen in live to his speech at 10, and then we'll analyze the political challenges he may have in getting the full package through Congress. Again, live coverage of the speech at 10 o'clock. But this hour, we're going to examine some questions about the Obama plan. Is what the president-elect proposing the right fix? He's talking about billions in middle-class tax cuts, billions more for infrastructure construction and repair, and he's hinting at some kind of adjustment in entitlement spending. Here's what he said Tuesday when he was asked at a press conference about his plan.
Part of the stimulus package will be to provide tax relief to middle-income families, and where it makes sense and is going to work, to provide some tax relief to businesses to spur on investment in the private sector.
Now economists and analysts are already weighing in as details of the package emerge, and we've asked two of them to join us this morning to talk about it. But I want to hear from you as well. For our listeners, given the deficit spending on the horizon, do you think this is the time for such large tax cuts to middle-class taxpayers and to businesses, for that matter? What should the president-elect be considering when it comes to entitlement spending? And what else could be added to the recovery package that you have not heard about yet? So weigh in with us as we talk about this with our analysts. What do you think about the idea that the president-elect, and he'll talk about this more today at 10, wants to provide a sizable middle-class tax cut, also talking about tax cuts for businesses, hinting at some changes in entitlement spending, and some of the other details that we've been talking about this morning, like your view on it as well, because the Obama team is going to have to sell this to the American people as well as to Congress. 800-242-2828. If you're listening in the metro area, 651-227-6000. If you're online with us today, you can still get in on this. Go to minnesotapublicradio.org and click on send a question. 800-242-2828 as you think about the idea of tax cuts to middle class income earners, tax cuts to businesses, entitlement spending, all of that that you've been hearing talked about in the last couple of days. 651-227-6000, online, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on send a question. To our guest this morning, Diane Lim Rogers is with us. She's chief economist for the Concord Coalition. She served as chief economist for the House Budget Committee, and she's with us this morning from Washington. Diane Rogers, good to have you here.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Great.
John Irons joins us as well. He's research and policy director at the Economic Policy Institute, and he is also with us this morning from Washington. John Irons, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I want you both to listen to this appointment that the president-elect made yesterday morning. It's basically why he called the press conference. He named this person to be the White House's chief performance officer. And I want to play for our listeners and for you a cut here of what Obama had to say about it. Let's listen.
When Nancy was offered her first position at Treasury, she responded, and I quote, "If you are willing to embrace significant change, then you're looking at the right person. But if you just want to keep the trains running on time, don't ask me to do this job."
Diane Rogers, do we need somebody in a position like that, and what would she actually do?
Well, I think it's really important that the president and the new administrative team send a message to the American public that we're going to have to do a lot of massive amount of new public spending, but at the same time, we have a plan to pay for it all over the longer run. And so I think one thing this new official will do is scour the budget, look really closely for things, and admittedly there are little things that she may start with, but ways to cut waste in the federal budget. I don't think it dismisses the need to do something about the larger
right.
government spending program. So I fear that this is a little bit more symbolic than substantive. And one thing I'd really like to see from the Obama administration is some effort to tackle the really large problems that loom ahead.
Well, we'll talk about that in just a second. John Irons, I just wondered, is this a gimmick? I mean, is this just a way for Barack Obama to say, look, I talked about waste and inefficiencies on the campaign trail, and this is my way of trying to solve that? But does it really get anything done?
Well, we'll have to wait and see. I think the indication is that the president-elect has shown every sign so far of wanting to do the kinds of public investments that will actually work. You know, the magnitude of the problem, the magnitude of where we are with the economy is just so huge that we can't afford to waste money in any way. So I think he's really looking at this as an opportunity to bring someone on board who will provide a watchful eye over everything that we do in the stimulus package, but also throughout the rest of the budget, to really make sure that we're making the most efficient use of these tax dollars.
And, John, he comes into this to give the proposal of the plan today at George Mason. Having gotten this news yesterday from the Congressional Budget Office, $1.2 trillion and more of a projected deficit, will you frame that for us and tell us? I know it's unprecedented, but what does it really mean? The number sounds so large, it's really hard to get your head around it.
Well, that's right. It's very hard to imagine $1.2 trillion.
It is.
That's a huge number. On the other hand, we have a huge economy. The economy as a whole is about $14.5 trillion. So it's much larger than I and other economists would like it to be. But I think it's important to note that the reason why we're at $1.2 trillion is because the economy has taken a nosedive. Not that we were at balance beforehand. We certainly weren't. But it's larger because we have the economy slowing down. So I think, you know, this is the time when we want to really worry about getting the economy going again. And that's the best thing we can do for the budget in the short run. It will absolutely mean higher deficits in the short run. We're likely to see more than $1.2 trillion once you add into it the stimulus package. But as a whole, it looks like we're going to be taking our national debt from about 40% of the size of our economy to likely around 50%.
Wow.
Which is still manageable. This is not a level that economists get too overworked about. It's not sustainable. We want to bring it down in the long run. But over the next year or two, we're going to have to we'd have to suck it up, and we're going to have higher deficits for a couple of years. We certainly need to look at the long-term situation, as I'm sure Diane will emphasize. But in the meantime, our first priority has to be getting the economy back on track.
Diane, that number does not include, as I said in the introduction, any kind of spending that President-elect Obama wants to do, and we know that he wants to do a lot. So start there and tell me what it means to come in with this size of a projected deficit and then want to spend massively on top of it.
Right. Well, to put it in context, the CBO numbers, the Congressional Budget Office baseline budget forecast, is based on current law going forward for the next 10 years. And the $1.2 trillion deficit is disturbing enough because it's the current year's deficit. But going forward, if you look at the CBO numbers and you adjust going forward for extensions of the current 2001 and 2003 tax cuts,
mm-hmm.
and if you adjust for some more realistic assumptions about how fast discretionary spending is going to grow over time, you have a picture. The Concord Coalition came out yesterday with our adjusted baseline, which is a more realistic projection going forward, and it suggests that our 10-year budget deficit is going to be over $10 trillion. In other words, that $1
trillion
is not an aberration.
Wow.
This year. The troubling thing about that going forward is when the Congressional Budget Office projects these budget figures, they are also projecting economic conditions, and they're also factoring in that although we're in a recession right now, we are going to recover after another year or two, certainly. And what's disturbing is that we have lost a lot of our tax revenue base, according to the Congressional Budget Office numbers. They revised their forecast of revenues down by $2 trillion over the next 10 years just based on their revisions to their economic forecast.
Mm-hmm.
That's disturbing to me because it says even with current law tax policy, we don't have a sustainable source of revenue to pay for the things that are already in current law.
Let me ask you this. What happens then, and I want to get into the tax cuts here, what happens when you then add the kinds of tax cuts? I think President-elect Obama was talking during the campaign about a tax cut for 95%
sure.
of Americans. So
sure.
add that to the top of this, and what does it
right.
mean?
Extending, well, for listeners, the Bush tax cuts that were passed in 2001 and 2003 were passed with an expiration date. That was done to artificially hold down the longer-term cost of it. So the tax cuts are all scheduled to expire under current law on December 31st, 2010, which is now just a couple years, less than 2 years away. If Congress and the president do nothing, we will revert to 2001 tax law. In other words, the tax law that was in place at the end of the Clinton administration on January 1st, 2011, we would revert back to that. When CBO estimates the budget outlook, it's required to estimate based on current law. And so CBO has assumed in its projections that already have shown this dramatic deterioration in the revenue base,
right.
they've assumed that we revert to higher taxes in 2011.
So they're factoring in that additional revenue, and they're assuming that these tax cuts will go away.
Will go away okay. in 2011, and still they have just told us that we've lost about $2 trillion in revenue over the next 10 years without extending any of the tax cuts. When President-elect Obama was campaigning, he was very determined to put forward a platform that included extending tax cuts for most of Americans, for 95% of Americans. That does save a lot of money because most taxes, it's true that the highest taxes are paid by the very richest in the country. It might save about half of the cost of extending the tax cuts, but the cost will still be trillions of dollars.
All right. John Irons, I want your view on whether this is a time when we see the kind of deficits that are being projected. This is really a time for yet another tax cut. I mean, the argument can be made, can it, that we've had tax cuts and here we are in this economic meltdown. What have they done?
Well, I think the situation really points to just how disastrous the Bush tax policy changes really were. That was really the key in digging the hole that we're currently in. The combination of the recession and the tax changes in 2001, 2003 just put us in a really bad place. Having said that, I think looking forward, you can, reverse some of the Bush tax changes, but keep other parts of it. And that's what Obama has proposed to do.
But why do we need another tax cut is what I'm asking.
Well, I think there's two reasons. First is one way to rebalance the tax code is to give a tax reduction to low and moderate income people. But in the current economic climate, there's a big premium placed on acting quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And these kinds of tax changes, he's talking about a $500 per worker tax credit or $1,000 per family, that kind of a change can have a relatively quick impact. And from what I've been hearing, the way they're going to change is they're going to change it through people's withholdings. So people will see increases in their take-home pay immediately.
Okay.
So by doing that through a withholding change, that really allows you to really impact the economy quickly.
So this is not something that at the end of the year when you do your taxes, you then realize more money. You're saying you will see it in your paycheck.
You will see it in your paycheck right away. And so the desire here is to get this done quickly, to get money into people's hands very quickly so they'll go out and spend it in the short run. Now, I don't think tax cuts by themselves would have a big enough impact on the overall economy to really turn the ship around. But as part of this comprehensive package where there's investments in infrastructure, where there's some aid to states,
mm-hmm.
Your listeners just heard about the situation in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if we can couple some of these tax changes with some other broader systemic changes in direct job creation and aid to states and in some additional assistance to people who have lost their jobs, I think the overall package could stand a very good chance of making this recession less deep than it would be otherwise and shorter than it would be otherwise.
Let me take some calls here, but we will not leave the tax question. I'm hoping our listeners are going to weigh in on this. John Irons is one of our guests this morning. He's Research and Policy Director at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington. Diane Lim Rogers is with us. She's a chief economist for the Concord Coalition, and she's joining us from Washington. We asked them to weigh in with us this morning as we anticipate more details on President-elect Barack Obama's economic recovery plan. He gives a speech at 10 o'clock from George Mason University about it. We will go live to Washington for that. But we're talking about what we already know. He's talked about tax cuts for middle-income earners, talked about tax cuts for businesses, spending on infrastructure, as John Irons just said, wanting to send money to the states, many of which, including Minnesota, are having tough economic times here. Big shortfall here in Minnesota in the billions, 4.5, I think, in the billions here in Minnesota, as you know. So we're talking about that this morning. I hope you'll weigh in about the idea of tax cuts and the idea of more investment in the infrastructure. And I want to talk to our guests also about Barack Obama has been hinting about maybe changes in entitlement spending. 800-242-2828. If you're in the Metro, 651-227-6000. If you're online this morning, MinnesotaPublicRadio.org, and click on Send a Question to Bob in St. Paul. Hi, Bob.
Hey, thanks a lot. I just want to say that I'm adamantly opposed to the tax cut part of this.
You are?
Yeah, the tax cuts, to me, sound kind of like voodoo economics revisited.
How so?
Well, we need to maintain and increase revenue, not basically lose huge chunks of it forever. I mean, if these tax cuts are put in place, we'll never recoup them. You know, I mean, if a politician says, oh, we can get them back, you know, that's unlikely to ever happen.
Diane, what's your view on this?
The listener has a point. One thing I worry about is the effectiveness of tax cuts in terms of short-term stimulus, which is what we're talking about, trying to get out immediately. The fact is that our economy has deteriorated to the point where consumers are really reluctant to be even called consumers.
Mm-hmm.
there's not the mood is not to go out and shop right now. And so the question is, how much stimulative benefit is there going to be from more tax rebates or other...
Or changes in the withholding or something like that.
Or changes in withholding,
yeah.
Even if we can immediately get the money out to people.
Is your concern that Americans will, as they did, I think, last time there were rebates, save that money or spend
right.
it on increased fuel costs or whatever?
Well, there aren't really increased fuel costs anymore right now, but I think that the... The rebates disappointed some economists the last time around. I think about 20% of it was spent in the short term. It's only likely to have less of an impact on consumption right now. Not that that's a bad thing. You know, I mean, getting money in people's hands who need the money, even if they save most of it, in my opinion, is not a bad thing. It's just that I think policymakers need to be careful. First of all, what is the goal of the tax cut? Are you trying to stimulate consumption and boost GDP immediately, or are you just trying to assist people who actually need more income? And the listener's comment about once you pass tax cuts, they're hard to take away. I really agree with that point.
We saw that in the campaign, didn't we,
right,
as they debated the Bush tax cuts.
Exactly, and a lot of what policymakers, what President-elect Obama is talking about is starting to sound more like permanent tax policy. And so what I would worry is that something that gets proposed in the name of short-term economic stimulus is really, as people have characterized it, a down payment on more permanent tax policy. We commit to more permanent costs that don't necessarily have lasting economic benefit.
Let me go to John on that. John, isn't it difficult for a president to say maybe 3 or 4 years on, perhaps as he's getting ready to run for reelection, well, we're going to let those tax cuts that we imposed during our economic meltdown expire now, and your taxes will go up. That's not likely to happen, is it?
Well, I think I agree with Diane that's a very hard switch back to make for the president and for the Congress as well. But I think it's very important to keep in mind here that not all tax cuts are the same. When it comes to providing an adequate and efficient economic stimulus, you have to look at what kinds of tax cuts. Are the tax cuts going to businesses? Are they going to high-income individuals, both of which tend to be relatively ineffective as an economic stimulus?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they going to people who have either just lost their job or have very low incomes or even moderate incomes, people who are more likely to spend that relatively quickly because they have to? So I think it's a very important when thinking about tax cuts that we don't lump them all in as one, you know, one homogeneous piece.
John,
there are different ways to do this.
Do you take anything, just a quick note here before we go back to the phones, because there are a lot of people waiting to join in, but do you take anything from, let's say, the Walmart numbers this morning? You know, everybody thought Walmart would be somewhat insulated from the economic troubles here, and now they're coming out saying that they're adjusting their fourth quarter forecast and that their stock is down because of that, 8%, I think, before the market opened. Doesn't that also indicate that consumers, no matter what the prices or what the kind of retail operation, that consumers simply are not spending? They're, as Diane said, they're just not in a mood to spend, and giving them a bit more you know, through withholding is really not going to make a difference in that.
Well, there's two reasons why people are cutting back on spending. One reason is because they're feeling very cautious and not very optimistic, and so they might be cutting back and delaying purchases. But the other reason is that they can't afford to. They just simply don't have the money. They've been laid off. They haven't seen the income gains that they were expecting. And so there are people out there who have needs and are unable to meet those needs with their current income. For those people, it's not that they don't want to spend money. It's they can't spend money.
Okay.
And so for those people, if you do provide some additional tax relief, they will indeed go out and spend it because they're behind as it is. So I think, you know, that's the key point, which is when thinking about the tax cuts, they have to be targeted. If you target it to people who want to spend the money but just can't afford to do it, they're going to go out and spend money, and they're going to have a greater impact on the economy than if you gave a tax break to someone who has a lot more money, has not been hurt as much by the economic downturn, who would be more likely just to save it.
All right. Let me take some calls here to Matt in Minnetonka. And Matt, I thank you for waiting. What do you want to add to this?
I was just listening to you guys earlier this year during the campaign trail, and one of your callers or your guests had said that during just after World War II, we had gotten up to 60% of GDP that was our national debt, and we're only at about 40%. So the guest said that not to worry too much about it until you got up to about 60%, and I was just calling him indicate that Barack Obama has plenty of room to play with here.
And you're comfortable with the idea of these deficits?
Of course. I mean, like, it's an investment in the country's future.
Diane?
One difference between now and our earlier history of debts and deficits is that we're largely reliant on foreign investors these days to finance our debt. So this is a little bit more reason to worry for any given share of GDP that our federal debt represents. I'm a little bit more worried about the fact that we have been increasingly reliant on foreign investors to pay for our things, to finance our consumption. In the past 8 years, out of every dollar that the federal government has borrowed, more than 80 cents of each of those dollars has come from a foreign investor instead of from a domestic, from a U.S. investor.
Mm-hmm.
The troubling thing about that is for our children and grandchildren, who are the ones who are going to end up paying these bills back, it's sort of like, you know, we've been running up credit cards and we're hoping that our children will pay the bills after we die. For our children and grandchildren, as they pay those bills back in the form of higher taxes or reduced government spending that will be required, that money is not flowing to other American children and grandchildren. That money is going to flow abroad because it has to. They're the ones that hold the treasuries, and, you know, they're the ones that we owe the money back to. So that's a very different situation, I think, than when back in World War II when we were financing our debt by, you know, with American investors buying up bonds.
Let me go back to the phones here to Emily in Minneapolis. Hi, Emily. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Yeah, I was calling because I kind of want to disagree with the earlier caller who had mentioned something about not thinking that tax cuts are a good idea. Mm-hmm. I was kind of on the fence about this myself, but the way I think of it, I'm an independent voter who did vote for Obama, so full disclosure, but I think he's on the right track here because you can only tax people who have actual income to tax. And at this point right now, a lot of people don't have jobs, and the people who do have jobs are skittish about will they have jobs tomorrow. We need, by cutting taxes for not only businesses, I never thought I'd say that, but and for individuals, you're going to have individuals who are going to spend the money. I know the rebate thing didn't really work out that well, but I think this time around you are going to get people who are going to spend the money, and that's going to stimulate, these businesses who don't have room to keep their employees, who are letting their employees go because they're not getting business from people who are not spending money because they don't have it. So I think that the tax cuts are a good idea, as well as the job growth that we need in order to get things going. It's kind of like, you can't just put one finger in, the dam to patch that one leak, because there's going to be other leaks that are going to come out of it. You got to, put all your fingers in all the holes all at one time, and I think that's what they're doing, and I'm confident that they're going to do the right thing.
All right, Emily, good to have your call, and you brought up something that I wanted to get to, so I appreciate the call. John, I wanted to ask about job creation, because this is another theme that the president-elect has sounded here, and we're about to get some unemployment numbers, I think, at the end of this week that are going to be distressing. Do you see enough in what we know so far in this recovery plan that assures you that new jobs will come out of it to replace so many of these jobs that we've lost?
I think so. I think.
And where is that?
Well, I think the package is big enough so we can expect a fairly significant job creation. The areas that are most likely to create jobs directly, some of the taxes will create jobs in an indirect way, but the direct job creation is likely to come in the form of spending on our national infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
And that ranges from the traditional roads and bridges to mass transit to our water systems. Here in Washington, D.C., we had a big water main break just a couple weeks ago, which flooded a couple major streets. And there's stories like that all across the country where you have these aging water systems, sewer systems, water delivery systems, which can be repaired or replaced. In Minneapolis, there's the great example of the Minneapolis bridge collapse that happened. We have bridges all across this country that are in similar conditions. Where we can, we have to replace these anyway, so we can do it now when it would help out the economy.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Does that happen quickly enough to make a difference in the heart of the recession here? Or does that, does the money take long enough to flow that those jobs really don't come into being and, within 8 months or a year, and then we're past the worst of it?
Well, that's a common concern you hear, and there's a couple things about that. First, we know we can do this quickly. The bridge in Minneapolis, from the time it collapsed to when there was traffic flowing on it, was just over a year. So we know that if there is a will, we can actually put people to work really quickly and get things moving. We know that it's possible. And I think, the administration or the incoming administration knows this, and so they're very likely to put some conditions on the money, saying, if you can spend it quickly, and let's get these things moving.
They would say that to the states.
They would say that to the states and say, let's put a priority on projects that are what are called shovel ready,
right.
That can be started relatively quickly to have an impact. But having said that, I think it's important to note that the jobs recession is going to last a long time. If you look at the past two recessions, it took a significant amount of time for us to even hit bottom. It took over 2.5 years to hit the bottom in the job market during the last recession, and it took a full 4 years for jobs to fully recover.
Huh.
So even if we don't get things started in the next 6 months, it's not like we won't need jobs in the middle of next year or in the middle of this year. We'll need jobs the middle of this year, the end of this year, and the middle of next year. So the more we can get going into the pipeline now, the better off we'll be in 6 months, in a year, in a year and a half.
Diane, do you see enough in this package to assure you that the kind of job creation that the president-elect is talking about, it can be done, can actually be accomplished?
Well, that's a tall order. I think that I agree with what John said earlier, going back to tax cuts, that there are good tax cuts and there are bad tax cuts for the purposes of immediate stimulus to the economy and job creation. And regard to the overall stimulus package, I mean, we're talking now about a mix of spending. You know, first it was going to be almost entirely spending, and now it seems that there are more tax cuts creeping in. I worry about the reasons for choosing the mix, that the reasons right now seem largely political, that the Democrats are all on board with lots of spending, the Republicans don't like a lot of government spending, they're willing to put up with it now if they get some of their tax cuts that they want. Mm-hmm. These are tax cuts that not all of the tax cuts that the Republicans want are things that Democrats like or think that are very effective in terms of creating jobs. And ideally, the way an economic policy advisor would recommend policy to President-elect Obama should be to think about maximizing the economic benefit per dollar that's going to be spent on stimulus and deciding what is that economic benefit you're trying to achieve.
Well, so,
I think it's job creation.
Yeah, so where would you put this idea of investing so heavily in infrastructure, sending this money out to the states, telling them, hey, repair your roads and your bridges with it? Do you think that measures up when we're talking about restoring millions of jobs?
What I would like to see, and I don't know if it's possible, but I would like to see a thoughtful matching up of where the dollars are going to go and what projects and what areas of the country those dollars are going to go and the needs in terms of where is unemployment a big problem, where are the workers losing their jobs, are there ways to make sure that we're matching up the benefits to where there's greatest need. And that where we, you know, is there a way to get some more money into projects, for example, that would employ unemployed Detroit auto workers? Is there a way to give them jobs that would be sustainable over the longer run? It's not just a temporary project, but maybe while they're on the job, they acquire good job training skills that will prepare them to move into other industries that are going to be well-funded in the future.
All right. Back to the phones here to John in Bemidji. Hi, John. Thanks for waiting.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your guest there just touched upon one of the realities that the Obama administration, I believe, is very keenly aware of is the political aspect. They don't have a guaranteed 60 votes in the Senate, and he has to play politics with this with these policies in order to move them through as swiftly as possible. Because as we've seen over the past months, time is money. And unless this is expedited, we can't allow it to languish in debate for months and months, because the economy is only going to get worse.
John Irons, do you see the Obama team putting things in there that they might not necessarily think are fully necessary, but to get some of the GOP support on board that they need? And so then that, you know, makes the package grow larger and larger.
Well, that, of course, is the art of politics, is to trying to find something that works for enough people to get something passed. But I think in this case, look, I'm kind of from the kitchen sink approach to fighting recessions. We need some of everything. We need some tax cuts. We need some aid to states. We need some infrastructure spending, building schools. We need unemployment extension and expansion of that system. And so I think this is one case where getting a lot of good ideas, putting it all into one big comprehensive package, actually does make a lot of sense. Will this package be what I would design or what Diana would design? Most likely not.
No.
But
no, that was a question. No, it is not something that you would. I mean, what would you take out if you were designing it?
I would probably, there's going to be some money in there for business tax cuts. And it's unclear exactly what those are going to look like, but I would weight it probably more towards the infrastructure spending piece.
Okay.
Diane would probably have her tweaks as well. But I think the caller is right. We do have to act on this relatively quickly. We do have to pass something which is substantial, which will, you know, try a little bit of everything in my book. It's not, you know, the scenario is so bad if we don't do anything. You know, we're looking at over 10% unemployment. We're looking like in 2010, if we don't do anything, the projections that we've done here at EPI suggest that about one-third of the population could be unemployed or underemployed at some point during the year.
Wow.
So, you know, the scenario is really fairly bleak if nothing is done. So, you know, will we have the exact optimal package? I would be astonished if that were the case. But will we have one that is good? Will we have one that can get the economy moving again? I think we are on the right track to do that.
Diane, what would you tell me concisely what you would remove from this package if you had your say to cut something out of it?
Like John, I would actually remove some of the business tax cuts that I think are being put in just to bring the other side, the other party on board.
And why? Because you don't think they will make much of a difference? Don't businesses need their own form of stimulus and tax cuts?
It's very hard to guarantee that if you give a business a tax cut that it ends up benefiting workers. And that's what I worry about, that it doesn't significantly affect employment. And that it ends up with just costing the Treasury money without really making a difference in terms of the real economics going on. You know, we have to remember that none of the spending, you know, it's true we have to do a massive amount of spending. It feels like we have to just throw money out there, but it doesn't mean that money comes for free. And eventually we have to find a way to pay for it. We have to think that this is affordable in the longer run. And we have to send a signal to the rest of the world that the U.S. has a sustainable economy. Otherwise, they'll start losing faith in investing in the U.S. economy, and then we're in really deep trouble.
All right, let me go back to the phones here to Matt in Minneapolis. Hi, Matt. You want to talk about entitlement spending?
I do. I'm calling because I've been really troubled by the use by the president-elect, who I voted for, his use of the phrase entitlement program.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a phrase invented by its opponents to make it more palatable to slash them. And I just think that they're basic human investments, and we should start calling them social insurance or human investments. And they're like infrastructure spending in aid to states in that they're countercyclical initiatives that we really need to keep our, you know, people in this country and our communities really healthy. So I really wanted to make that point and just challenge folks to stop using that phrase because it's a loaded political phrase.
I also want to ask you, though, I mean, this came up in the press conference yesterday, and it was just a glancing clue that we didn't have much more detail on. But it sounds like the president-elect's team is looking at adjusting the spending that is done on these programs. That concerns you?
It would very much concern me if the adjustment meant a downward adjustment. I mean, we have tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of people without health care in the country, and we have people who are worried about retiring and being able to stay out of poverty. So if they were going to adjust those numbers downward, then I would want to know what's their plan to make sure that people are kept healthy and that they can retire without sinking into poverty.
Diane, what do you take from what you're hearing about, and Matt won't like this, but about entitlement spending? I mean, what are you hearing, reading between the lines of what the Obama team is saying about this?
Well, the Obama team acknowledges and recognizes that our fiscal policy is on an unsustainable track. Unsustainable doesn't mean that the spending programs, Medicare, Social Security, are necessarily going to be dramatically slashed in terms of the availability to people who really need those programs. I think the Obama team recognizes that those programs do serve valuable, essential social insurance purposes, and I agree that for some reason the word entitlement has started to get a bad reputation or a bad rap. I think that one thing that the Obama administration also recognizes is we need to send the world a signal that we're going to be trying to figure out a way to make this all work out, to be able to pay for the social insurance that we want to preserve or enhance, in fact. I think there are ways of looking at adjusting spending that don't involve taking any benefits away from people who really need them. Instead, maybe looking at who gets the benefits who doesn't really need them. You know, I mean, Medicare,
more of like a means testing kind
of
thing.
Right. You know, I think to be realistic, we have to realize that our current trajectory on spending for these programs is scary. It's, you know, it's escalating at too high of a rate, especially for a country who's reluctant to raise taxes. And I prefer to look at the tax side of the budget as well and say, look, if we are, you know, a compassionate society, we want to keep providing assistance and support to Americans in their old age when they're not working anymore, when they have larger health needs. Given that we have a growing aging population, if we want to do that for them, we have to find ways of targeting that money where it is most needed, at the same time be willing to pay for it with higher taxes.
John Irons, I know you have to go in a moment, but I want to ask you what you think you're picking up from the Obama team about how they're thinking about spending on these programs.
My impression right now is that this is somewhat on the back burner. The most immediate concern is the stimulus package is getting the economy going in the short run. Now, Diane is right that we will need to make some changes to these programs going forward. But I think it's important for your listeners to realize that when they talk about entitlements, it's primarily Social Security, Medicare, and to a lesser extent, Medicaid in terms of the future shortfalls. Social Security does not need a major overhaul, you know, despite President Bush's best efforts to scare people to think that we had a crisis. You know, some changes will need to be made, but probably not major to bring that into balance. Medicare side, what's driving those cost imbalances is the healthcare system as a whole. We see rising costs, throughout the healthcare system, not just in what government picks up. So what we really need to do is address the healthcare system as a whole.
So you're saying with healthcare reform, you think more balance is brought into play with the spending on Medicare?
That's right. I think, you know, it's not a Medicare problem per se. It is a healthcare problem. And so addressing the entire healthcare problem will help inform what happens with Medicare and Medicaid. And so I think, you see now that Tom Daschle looks to be the point person on this, and there's some hearings today in
Washington. Confirmation hearing today, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they're looking at the entitlement problems from a perspective which is broader, which is, you know, let's take a broader look at the healthcare system, what we need to change there, and then entitlement discussions on Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security will then be brought into that discussion, but they're taking a much broader view of it.
John, I appreciate the time. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
John Irons is Research and Policy Director at the Economic Policy Institute and joining us this morning from Washington. Just to let you know what's going on here for our 10 o'clock hour, we're awaiting a speech from George Mason University by President-elect Barack Obama, where he's going to flesh out some of the details of the economic recovery plan that he has been working on, he and his team have been working on, and he's been letting out little clues about it, but we're going to hear a full explanation of what he has in mind this morning, and also laying the foundation of now trying to get this through Congress. There is some opposition building to some of the parts of the plan, and we're going to listen in on the speech at 10 o'clock, and then if there's time, we'll talk about some of those political challenges of getting this through Congress. Charles Franklin, political scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, will be with us for that part of it. But going live to Washington at 10 to listen in on the speech. Online here, Diane Rogers from Greta in Winona, she asks, what's the alternative to a massive stimulus that would increase our debt? Do you think that the economy would recover on its own, or is this is really the only choice that there is?
Oh, I think the economy would recover on its own. I think the purpose of stimulus is not to eliminate a recession, you know, but is to make it more shallow and hopefully less prolonged. So it's to ease the pain along the way. It's to reduce the fluctuation in the economy, and hopefully it's to come out of the recession in a little bit better position than we would have otherwise, because if we're able to make some investments along the way that have long-lasting benefit without huge long-term commitment in terms of cost, then that's a good thing. I don't think there's an alternative. You know, obviously we're not going to, we're committed. The entire D.C. policy community is certainly committed to a massive amount of deficit spending right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't think there's any possibility that we're not going to do this. So I think it's just important to say, you know, we do want it to make us better off. We do want policy to make us better off than we would have been if we did nothing. And so let's make sure that happens. Let's make sure we weigh costs against benefits and do our best to get the most, you know, benefit per dollar we spend.
You don't hear this discussed, but this has come up in a couple of our conversations about taxes, which is this idea of maybe a national sales tax or some other way to bring in more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as I say, you don't hear that discussed, especially in an age when we're talking about tax cuts. But why aren't things like that seriously considered?
I actually think things like that will be seriously considered in the next couple years before we get to the expiration of the Bush tax cuts. Because there is going to be realization that it's hard to just take our existing federal income tax system and on a sort of piecemeal, backed up against the wall kind of basis, keep trying to get more revenue out of it. We have a lot of inefficiency in our tax system. There are ways to make the system more efficient and at the same time raise more revenue, which is what we need to do in order to pay for all the things we want to do and all the things we've already committed to doing. It's my hope that actually the expiration of the Bush tax cuts would be impetus for the federal government to take a look at reforming in a more fundamental way the tax system.
And how much revenue can that potentially bring in? I mean, let's say it's a national sales tax. Is that the way to go?
I personally don't really like the idea of a national sales tax in terms of a replacement to the income tax. I think what we're more likely to see is the federal government consider new revenue sources. So an example would be an add-on value-added tax. In other words, we keep our income tax system. We try to make it more efficient. We plug in some of the holes in the existing income tax system that are both unfair and inefficient. Unfair because the benefits tend to go to high-income households. Inefficient because it distorts people's decisions and it loses revenue. So I think we'll see sort of a two-pronged approach to tax reform, I hope, going forward, and that is let's look at our existing income tax system. Let's make it better. Let's make it a more reliable tax base. And at the same time, let's look for alternative taxes that we could implement anew that are actually good taxes.
What would that – give me an example.
One example that I have been trying to advocate for are environmentally motivated taxes. So Congress – had made some progress in the last Congress to talk about carbon policy, cap and trade policy. In other words, putting a price on carbon emissions in the economy. If the government adopts a policy, a carbon policy, it is a potential source of revenue for the federal government. And it's what economists consider a good type of tax or fee because it actually corrects for the fact that we have no market right now for something that's obviously worth something to people. In other words, if we value the quality of our environment, if we think that there's a cost associated with global warming, then the problem is right now we don't price that cost.
You know, we've talked with so many analysts and economists who advocate just exactly what you're talking
right.
about, and yet when I say, what do you think the real chances are of getting something like that passed, there's a real question about it.
Well, there's a question about it because it amounts to something that looks like a tax,
right.
No matter what you label it.
Right.
And, of course, policymakers, politicians, don't like to talk about raising taxes. So that is the challenge. It's a challenge of any tax policy where we're talking about the need to raise more revenue. But unfortunately, the reality is going to set in over the next couple years that we obviously need more revenue, that we're not going to be able to cut spending. We won't want to cut spending to the levels that we would have to bring spending in line with revenues. So I think the realization is going to be there that, look, you know, nobody has liked talking about tax increases, but if we don't raise taxes now, if we don't raise more revenue now, all it means is our kids are going to have really ridiculously high tax burdens and a lower standard of living, and we don't really want to do that. I mean, I'm hoping that the message can be it's either higher, slightly higher taxes now or dramatically higher taxes on our kids.
I know you have heard President-elect Obama, as he's laying out the recovery plan, also talking about his desire to bring fiscal accountability and responsibility back to government budgeting. But when you see the numbers here, I heard that yesterday. And I thought, how could that ever be done, you know, in his, let's say he even gets a second term, given the kinds of numbers that we're confronting? So how much credibility do you think there is when you hear talk of bringing back fiscal responsibility?
Well, I think we're in good shape in terms of who we've elected president, in terms of an ability to bring people together, I hope. You know, I hope this claim of a postpartisan era comes true. The way you start to work together and bring fiscal discipline back to the federal budget is you get away from the mindset that says, I don't like what you're doing, but I'll let you do what you're doing if you let me do what I want to do. You know, it's the piling on of, it's what's going on with stimulus right now. It's, you know, okay, you can have your infrastructure spending if I can have my business tax cut. And unfortunately, when you negotiate that way and when you stay stubborn in terms of all the things, all the policies you want that are actually very partisan in nature, if you are stubborn in it, you end up just adding to the bill. If instead people actually work together and say, look, I know we have constraints, we have budget constraints, we have got to start getting our act together in terms of being able to pay for what we want to do, and therefore I'm going to just go forward, I'm just going to insist on my best policy. These are my best policies that I really think are going to help the economy, and I'm willing to give up these things that I previously fought for if you are willing to give up something on your side too. And it's only when it's like a give and take that way, saying everyone's going to give up a little bit of something. Everyone's going to say, I'm going to have, you know, my former boss, Chairman Spratt, used to say some skin in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone is going to sort of pitch in together and make sacrifices, because the whole country is going to have to make sacrifices over the next couple decades. And the sooner we start making the hard choices now, the less the pain will have to be later on.
Good to have you today. I hope you'll come back and talk with us. We'll see what happens, all right?
Thanks for having me.
Diane Lim Rogers is chief economist for the Concord Coalition. She served as a chief economist for the House Budget Committee, so she knows the ways of Washington quite well. And she was joining us this morning from Washington. And we are headed back to Washington at 10 o'clock in just a couple of minutes here, awaiting a speech by President-elect Barack Obama, who will appear at George Mason University to flesh out more details on the economic recovery plan that he has been talking about. We'll go live to the speech. We'll listen into that if there's time remaining in the hour. Charles Franklin, political scientist from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, will join us to talk about the political challenges of getting this package through Congress. There is some opposition building already for some of the parts of this plan from some of the Republican members of the House and the Senate. So we'll examine where the opposition may come from if there's time. But for much of the hour, we will listen in to what President-elect Obama has to say about his economic recovery plan. I'm getting a lot of mail about our upcoming Talking Volumes event. I do want to mention this. Nikki Giovanni is coming in late January. You can find all the details about that event online at minnesotapublicradio.org. And if you want tickets, I'd suggest you buy them soon. They're selling quickly. This is Mid-Morning.